Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alrighty, third hour. Tiki and Tierney here, company from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. What is good on this Thursday, week 8 tonight, Panthers-Falcons. So get in your lineups and check out your point spreads. Get ready to roll with that. We're going to get with Calais Campbell in a moment. Steve Garvey will join us this hour. Great Dodger. Remember, they won the 81 World Series, and they were in the World Series in the late 70s twice against our Yankees in 77, 78. Yankees got them. Dodgers came back and beat them in 81. An all-time Dodger luminary, so we'll talk to him about finally cracking through. First time in 32 years as Dave Roberts' bold prediction came through. While we're waiting for Calais, you know, Teague, I wanted to circle back. We had a great chat with Gary Myers, who's got a GOAT podcast with Tom Brady. And it's interesting to me how the thought entered your mind and how you worded it, and how a similar thought entered my mind and I worded it.
Same topic.
Same topic for sure.
Different angle.
Yep, different avenues, but I guess we hit the same intersection eventually. Do you believe that, you know, now that a little more loosey-goosey, having a little more fun, a little different scene, a little different vibe, you think after all these years Tom Brady says, man, I probably should have cut out of New England. Yeah, a couple of years earlier I should have bounced. What do you think?
I don't think so, BT, because there's something, I don't know, special about being in one place at one time because it's so rare. You know, like my brother played 16 years for one team. Just think about how like anomalous that is. It doesn't make sense that it could happen in today's NFL. And Tom Brady had a chance to not only be the GOAT, but also do it at one place and go through the ups and downs. Now that's the difference. So with Rondé in Tampa, they had that peak in 2002, the 2003 Super Bowl, when they won and they beat up the Oakland Raiders, and it was the height of the height. There was like Hall of Fame quality players all over that roster: Warren Sapp and Derrick Brooks and John Lynch, and so it's like one of those moments that just it sits with you and you can live it.
Yeah.
But Rondé went through a lot of downs. Like Tampa was like good, average, bad, horrible, you know, a little good. Like it was just Chiano became the head coach. Like, and so like you were riding this roller coaster.
Raheem, right? He was
like,
there with Raheem,
yeah,
right?
Raheem. Raheem had a 10-win season one year. But it, you know, he was too young. I mean, he was younger than Rondé.
He was 32, wasn't he?
He was younger than Rondé at the time, which is crazy. Think
of
that.
Yeah.
But it was like a roller coaster. So you're like hanging on. Like I'm going to stick here with this team while we go to the bad because it's my team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady never had to do that. It was all you win a division every year. It was I don't want to say it was easy because it's never easy. That discounts and underappreciates the hard work that goes into the preparation and the that leads to the success that they've had. But like, he never had to experience the bad times.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Gary was saying resonated, right? When he was saying, you know, Tom leaves and the Patriots are horrible, and Tom probably left because he saw what was not in the cupboard.
Yep.
And I get why. Yeah, I want to have fun. I want to, you know, win at the end of my career. But I don't know. They could have been. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I really don't.
Well, the appeal of hanging them up with, you know, one team on your resume, Jeter. You know, your brother. I mean, it's just so – Peyton didn't do it. Joe Montana didn't do it.
Nope.
Most players don't do it.
Yeah, because they're not ready to be done.
Yeah, right? Jerry Rice didn't only play for two teams. Jerry Rice played for Seattle for a minute at the
right.
end.
I kind of forget that.
Right. I only scored a touchdown against the Jets at Seattle.
I thought he scored a touchdown in one of those
did.
Games.
And I think he was reaching for the pylon. It was like a really acrobatic touchdown, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But because he did leave anyway, that allure that, you know, one team 20 years, 22 years, 23 years, whatever it equates to, that's gone anyway because he left. So
yeah.
he already allowed his mind and his body to get to that point of leaving because he literally left.
Yeah.
I wonder if he has any regret. Where he wakes up and like, oh, geez, why? But I mean, just when he wanders and his mind wanders and he thinks about his career.
I don't think he does. You know why I don't think he does?
I think
he's winning. Because think about Joe Montana. Joe Montana left the San Francisco 49ers mainly because Steve Young was there pushing him out the door as hard
Correct.
As possible. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So Joe took the high road and left. And if he had gone someplace else and been horrible and, you know, I guess the 49ers' decision to move on, bring Steve Young in there justified, then you probably have some regret. But when you leave, say in Joe Montana's case, the San Francisco 49ers, you go to the Kansas City Chiefs and then take them to the postseason and are pretty good there as well, it just feels just like you're justified in what your action was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because Tom Brady is winning and he's ultimately going to win, I mean, heck, in some cases, some places, they're the favorite out of the NFC right now. And so, yeah, but it just feels different than if he had gone someplace and not had any success.
I got you. Well, Teague, we're joined now by a player. It's funny, you and I were debating his Hall of Fame candidacy. It came up on the show the other day. And without putting the cart before the horse, that did kind of seep into the conversation. We were talking about Calais Campbell, who was, you know, I mean, if you know the NFL, he hasn't been under the radar. But in terms of maybe to the fringe fan, little under the radar, maybe because of some of the markets he played in. I know the Cardinals were pretty good for a few years when he was there, but you know, and Jacksonville had a minute as well. But two of the smaller markets. Now he's with you know, one of the best teams and one of the best franchises, great city, and they had the big game this weekend against the Steelers. Calais Campbell, 5-time Pro Bowler, with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Calais, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, living the dream.
Yeah, you are, dude. You really are. I mean,
how can you not, man?
He is living the dream, this guy.
You're a couple years past 30. You're still playing at a high level. You're on a competitive team right now. And, you know, you play the Steelers, as BT mentioned. And, you know, do you feel the rivalry? Obviously, you've only been there for a couple of years. But do you feel the rivalry? We were talking about how rivalries have kind of gone by the wayside in the NFL because of player movement. But this Steelers and Ravens rivalry still feels like it's strong. You feel it?
Almost definitely. You know, there's definitely a feeling in the building, you know, this week that's different than other weeks. And, you know, it really started even before this week. I mean, you can tell, you know, earlier in the year, you know, teams are like, hey, you know, I mean, players on the team were like, you know, these games matter, but you really don't become a Raven until you play against the Steelers. You know, it was circled on the calendar. Even when the game moved, because originally we were supposed to play them last week and we have a bye this week.
Yeah.
But when they had the schedule change, they moved to what we had to bye before. And so everybody was excited about that because we had extra time to get ready, you know, for this game.
You know, and when you bring up this, you know, this game, it's the Steelers are at a height right now. You all are at a height right now. And a lot of people believe that this is a game that's going to define, you know, the division. How important is this game this early in the season?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, division games are usually worth two because you get, you know, you get the win and you also get a game up on them, you know, with the loss that they get in their division. So it's definitely very important. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, there's a lot of football that we played and, you know, we go out there and play our best ball game. It doesn't mean anything. We win this ball game and we still got a whole lot more work to do to get where we want to be. And if something happens where we don't win the ball game, I mean, we still are in position to do whatever they want to do. So it's not end-all, be-all. But at the same time, I mean, it's a statement game. It's more of a mentality where, you know, just get that momentum going you know, into these November games where they really start to matter and trying to end up where we want to be. These games really start stacking up and allowing us to be in that position to control our own destiny.
So we're talking to Calais Campbell, and he's on his third team, Arizona, Jacksonville, now the Ravens, first year there. Five-time Pro Bowler with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Every culture's different. Every building's different. The energy's different. The messaging's different. Calais, when you first walked in, I don't mean when you first signed the contract, but like the first day of business, the first practice, the first team meeting with Coach Harbaugh, the first sense of real football stuff. What was your first impression of the Ravens building?
It's a very good impression. You know, you kind of learn quick that, you know, the thing that's most encouraged is communication. You know, I mean, you know, there's no such thing as over-communicating here. You know, there's definitely a brotherhood that's formed by over-communicating and really kind of really getting to know each other. And then on top of that, you know, it's really like, you know, the model is always, you know, we want to lead to lead in effort. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like that. You know, I never heard that before. And that was pretty cool because at the end of the day, you know, I mean, everybody has talent. Every team is talented, you know, but what are some things that you can control that nobody else, you know, I mean, you can just set yourself apart. You know, that's one metric. If we can lead the league in effort, at least, you know, have that mindset where nobody's going to outwork us. You know, they might be able to match us, but not outwork us.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be in a position to be successful at the end of the year.
How's Harbaugh different from other coaches that you've had?
Man, Harbaugh, I think the best thing about Harbaugh is that, you know, he loves to tell stories and everything has a mental mentality that's going to allow us to kind of think a certain way. You know, I mean, he definitely is, you know, the most talkative coach I've ever had, you know, and trying to make sure that, you know, just the way of thinking, the mindset is created a certain kind of way. And I like that because, you know exactly what you stand or what they want. I think that's important.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Communication is key, and you got to like your head coach. Otherwise,
that whole family likes stories.
Yeah,
too.
It gets
the
hard.
Whole football crew.
Yeah, Jim is the same way for sure.
And his dad.
Like, you guys were on the bye week, Calais, and so you haven't played with Yannick Ngakoue, but he is there, obviously, the trade from the Minnesota Vikings. What's he going to bring? We know that, you know, pass rushing is paramount in the NFL, especially when you're going up against teams in your division that have some pretty good quarterbacks, Baker and Joe Burrow, who's obviously both young. But Ben Roethlisberger this weekend, I mean, you got to get pressure on him. What are you expecting from Ngakoue now that he's on the edge here with you guys?
Yeah, I'll tell you, in practice, I mean, he looks spectacular. You know, I mean, just this the way he's come into this organization and tried to, you know, I obviously, you know, a new player comes into a place, you want to make your presence felt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first couple of days of practice have been incredible. Now, obviously, you know, you want to do that in the game situation. And I play with him in Jacksonville. I'm very familiar with him. I know what he brings and how hard he plays and how bad he wants it. So I expect him to go out there and be a force. And now, obviously, you know, he's trying to learn the playbook still. He's trying to figure things out. So, you know, he's not going to get as many reps as he, I'm sure he wants to get, you know, starting out. But, you know, in those past situations where he can go out there and just, you know, and bend the edge and go to work, I expect him to go out there and be a force and put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And really, I feel bad for every quarterback we're playing in the future. I mean, obviously, you know, we are really good pass rusher front, in my opinion, already.
Yeah.
But adding him makes us that much better. I feel like, you know, we really got so much better in that trade, bringing him in, and I can't wait to see what we do together.
I don't blame you. You guys are going to destroy people. And, you know, you talk about getting to the opposing quarterback. What I'm curious, we're talking to Calais Campbell, the Ravens, with us here. Calais, what was your impression, you know, from a distance? You know, I don't know how well you knew him. He's obviously younger, and he's in the league a couple of years. You've been around a while. What was your impression of Lamar Jackson from a distance, and what is your impression of Lamar Jackson now that you see him every day in the building as a teammate, as the leader of this team?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, from a distance, I didn't know a whole lot about him. I just knew that he seemed like a very humble guy and a guy who just is very gifted and blessed to play the game of football. And so, you know, when I got here and I got to see the way he works, and just, you know, see how much he loves the game of football, it makes sense. I mean, his success is there because he puts the work in. I mean, you don't get to go out there and do what he's done if you don't put the work in. And so I thought it was really cool to see how hard he works. I mean, he loves going out there and practicing. He treats it like it's a he has a big smile on his face. You know, a lot of times you play this game, you know, you see guys who just, you know, struggle to get through practice, and on game day it's a lot of fun. Well, with him, I mean, you know, practice is fun.
Yeah, no, you can tell. He just seems like a likable guy. I've never met him in person. I think BT met him because of the Heisman thing with CBS Sports Network. But he seems like he's fun. Tell us, Dez Bryant. I think he's there now. What's it? What are you expecting from Dez? Is he still got it left? We know that he had the Achilles issue. He signed. I think he signed. He signed now. What do you think about Dez?
He's practiced with us the last couple of days.
Okay, great.
And you know, he's been working the scout team and just kind of getting back into playing shape and doing a thing. Just doing his thing and trying to get a feel for the game again. And it's been great to see. I mean, he seems like, you know, the scout team quarterbacks are throwing the ball, you know, pretty much, you know, probably 50% of the time. So he's getting open and it's cool to see. And I feel like, you know, he can really help us win some ball games once he kind of, you know, learns the playbook and works his way into the rotation. And I think where he's going to make the biggest impact, I think, is just being that veteran presence.
Yeah.
Because our receiving core is very young. And so it's nice to have a guy who's been on the big stage and who's made Pro Bowls and All Pros and just can give advice to our younger guys and help them learn how to create space and get open and be able to do different drills after practice to work on becoming a really good player in this league.
All right, man. You know, listen, we may as well throw this by you because as I was bringing you on the show, I referenced the conversation Teek and I had the other day. I'm sure it's not centrally on your mind, but come on, you've been around a while. You made 5 Pro Bowls. You're a student of the game. When I say the words Hall of Fame and I mention your name and we were debating the merits of your candidacy, what do you think? You think you've had a Hall of Fame career so far? I know it's a tough question to answer, man. But honestly, do you feel like you've done that so far?
Well, I mean, I hope that when I'm done playing this game, I end up in Canton. That's always been the ultimate goal. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and play every play trying to show that, you know, that I'm worthy. And hopefully when it's all said and done, you know, I get there. You know, like if I was retired today, well, again, I have no idea. And honestly, I'm not retiring today, so it really doesn't matter just yet. But
yeah.
I do hope that when I'm done playing, you know, I hope to get in.
You don't sound old, but you're not old. You're only 34 years old, but you have that old head voice.
He does.
You know what I mean, Calais. You walk in a lot. I played with a couple of those guys. Lomas Brown was like 36 when I got there. It's like he's got an old head. Right, good luck to you. Good luck to you, Calais, man. Keep doing what you're doing. You're leading the team in sacks right now with 4. So it was a good acquisition by Baltimore, and we know that you're going to keep doing your thing because that's just what you've done your whole career, man. Good luck and congratulations.
You got it. Yep. One of the good guys, too, T.
One of the massive men.
He's 6'8". He's like a power forward,
yeah,
really.
He's one of the massive dudes in the game.
He is big.
If you've never seen him in person, which I have, you're just like, dude, what in the world?
No, we had him on Tops once, and he was a behemoth of an individual, but a gentle giant. I wouldn't want to piss him off, but just sweet and a hell of a player, dedicated guy, good in the community. And the Ravens, you know, like, you know, 5 or 6 other teams, maybe 7 in the NFL, have a chance to win a championship this year.
They just got
to
beat their kryptonite, Kansas City Chiefs. There's a lot of people in the AFC's kryptonite.
Yeah. I got the Steelers this weekend.
Yeah.
A little appetizer there as well. All right. So let's switch it up. Coming up next, the Dodgers. First time 32 years. 32 years. Steve Garvey's going to join us. All right. Dodger great. Going to stop by, see what the city's thinking, see what he thinks of the team, see what he thinks about the Rays pulling Snell, the modern game, the future of the Dodgers, maybe a dynasty. We'll hit that coming up next. Teek and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line on this Thursday. Teek and Tierney's 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, everybody knows I love baseball, and the stories I've told over the years from my childhood, early 80s, falling in love with the game, this week in baseball, you know, emulating all the stars of the game back then. This guy was right in the middle of it, and I still have no idea why he's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was a great player. He was a hell of a first baseman, could pick it. He was clutch in the playoffs. He's a World Series champ. He's a 10-time All-Star. And let's face it, the guy made some money doing some endorsements, too. Him and Jim Palmer, two pretty good-looking dudes from the 80s, right, Deke? We're talking about Steve Garvey. Steve, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, that's funny about the underwear commercial. There were six of us that did that first underwear commercial for Sports Illustrated. You know, Palmer and Pete Rose and, you know, basketball, hockey, and so forth. And it was for Jockey and... You know, and I'm still a little disappointed that Pete was even more outraged that Jim ended up on the billboards around the country. And you know, but of course, you know, we wore the strap T-shirts and the boxer shorts, and he got the briefs. So,
oh my God! Well, listen, it all worked out, and you know, that team. That's I've told Tiki a few times here, Steve. That '81 Dodgers team was the first World Series that I was really locked in on. You beat my Yankees, Reggie, of course, Goose, Guidry, et cetera. And that team, before we get to this team, that 81 Dodgers team with Ron Say and Billy Russell, Davey Lopes around, what an infield, what a pitching staff, Tommy Lasorda. I'd put that 81 Dodgers team up against pretty much anybody in the history of baseball. I thought you guys were that good. What a team.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. It was a team that, you know, we had gone to the World Series in 74 against Oakland. We were too young. You know, they were the wily veterans. And then the great trilogy of 77, 78, and 81 with the Yankees. No better World Series ever. Talk about ratings, you know. Mm-hmm. Right coast, left coast, two historic franchises, usually, you know, 10, 12 All-Stars on the field. 77 and 8, I thought, were our best teams. You know, we were starting to get into our prime. Should have won 77, although Reggie comes up with those three home runs and, you know, magic moments sometimes take victory from the jaws of defeat, so forth. But, you know, we kept going. And to the credit of Al Campanis, the GM, the O'Malley family, they kept this group together. You know, our infield was together 8.5 years. And then we would add a player, Reggie Smith, a Dusty Baker, a Rick Monday, a pitcher here or there that maintained, you know, excellence for arguably 10 years. So 81 came along, and you talk about destiny, and I think probably this Dodger team this year had a certain amount of destiny. But we, you know, shortened season, 110 games, first NLDS in history, and 3 out of 5, we dropped the first two games, and then win 3 at home. Then we go split with Montreal, and that was back when the NLCS was 3 out of 5. So we lost our home field advantage. They won game 3. I had a 2-run home run in the 8th to tie it, and then Rick Mundy's famous home run on a 28-degree day in Montreal where it snowed a couple hours after the game. And without an off day, we start the next day at Yankee Stadium for 2, and we drop both of those. And on the plane back, I said to the guys, you know, there was a little resolution, you know, we can't let this slip away. So we got them right where we want them. And then we ran off 4 straight games. So that team had everything. It had power. It had some speed. You know, the togetherness of the infield, especially with Yeager playing for 8.5 years. So it had a little bit of everything, longevity, and then finally a coronation in 81.
Yeah, this team feels like it had a long build up till it ultimately had success, this current iteration of the Dodgers. And you got to give Dave Roberts so much credit because people were putting him on the hot seat and Clayton Kershaw. How does this team stack up against those of the history of the Dodgers? It's been a long time coming, and it just feels very fulfilling, I assume, for all of you Dodgers out there on the West Coast.
Absolutely. Yeah, 32 years between 88 and this year. If you would have left the country for 30 years and come back and said, gee, how many world championships have the Dodgers won? And you would have said none. They would have gone, that can't be. And it went 3 or 4. So, and for a variety of reasons, of course, bankruptcy, 6, 7 years ago, and then the sale of the team. Lots of credit to Guggenheim Partners. I had a group, and, you know, and one of the great business accomplishments of my life, I raised $1.4 billion and came up $700 million short. So you can't be a hedge fund.
Wow. Wow.
So, but, you know, there was, without our knowledge, Spectrum, Time Warner had entered the fray from the back door to bid on the cable rights. And Guggenheim, very savvy, found that out and knew that they had to go over 2 and ended up at 2.15. And they put their money where their hedge fund is. You know, they committed to the infrastructure of the team, both at the stadium, minor leagues, international office, the commitment to pick up a quality free agent. And although it's been, you know, the whole franchise was depleted 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they've won a division each year, but didn't have that one or two pieces. Sometimes sabermetrics took over and there was too much of the, you know, 7 lefties against a righty and vice versa. And the maturation of, like you said, Dave Roberts, you know, for on the field, what happens on the field, the ultimate person that's going to stand at the sit at the press conference and answer the tough questions or why you, how did you win that world championship finally? And it's been him. So he's matured. He's been able to handle the tough questions. He's lived or died sometimes with a faithful commitment to the guys that got him there, whether it was Clayton or Kenley Jansen or whomever. And finally it paid off. He made all the right moves against a good, scrappy Tampa Bay team. But, you know, almost everybody picked the Dodgers to win. Before the season and then beginning of the playoffs and at the very end, the best team won.
Yeah, we picked him as well. Steve, did you need to see Clayton Kershaw deliver a championship to officially be stamped an all-time great?
Well, you know, I didn't. But there have been exceptional athletes, whether baseball, football, basketball, hockey, that during the regular season and maybe early on in their playoffs, you know, were exceptional. And then when it came to that final series, whether Stanley Cup, NBA Finals, Super Bowl, or World Series, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more in the mind of that elite competitive athlete that for that person, man or woman, to win the ultimate prize, you know, really justifies it in their mind. I mean, those of us that play the game, Tiki, you know how hard it is and how tough it is to win during the season to get mm-hmm. to the playoffs and then to win the ultimate goal. It's not always the best team that wins. It's not always the best player. It takes tremendous teamwork in this team sport of baseball and all the team sports. So but to see him do well this offseason, I think absolved, you know, postseason's passed in many minds of the average fan or the average observer. And for those of us who have put on the uniform and who know how tough it is, and for him to finally win the world championship. And you could see in the press conference at the end, there was an exhale, you know,
yeah,
so to speak.
For sure.
And for him and his career, it puts an exclamation on it. Whatever happens in the future, he's still going in the Hall of Fame. He'll still be a world champion and one of the best ever.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. Now, on the other side, there's always a loser when you crown a champion. And the Tampa Bay Rays, they had a fantastic run this season, and everybody gave them credit, even if not a chance in the World Series against the Dodgers. But it seems it'll come down to one decision that Kevin Cash made, taking out Blake Snell, and it probably shouldn't. But when you look back on it, you've done things a certain way all season long. Blake Snell doesn't pitch into the sixth inning. His ERA, when he does, is exponentially higher than what it is when he doesn't. You know, do you fault a Skip for doing what he thinks is right, even if it turns out to be wrong?
Well, you know, I admired how Snell took his game, I mean, higher for game 6. I mean, what did he strike out the first 3 guys twice around, 6 strikeouts? Yeah. I mean, Mookie Betts, all the quality hitters, Corey Seager, he was untouchable. And, But the manager's role is to take that starting lineup and the ancillary pages, you know, from the front office, the sabermetrics, the logarithms, the tendencies. And his role is to execute that. He did it exceptionally well during the season, did it through the playoffs. And finally, in the elimination game, he had to do it, you know. And could have Snell gone another couple innings? Yeah. What if he would have let up a home run? And then, the higher powers, so to speak, would have said, you didn't follow the script.
Yeah, but Steve, the rest of the baseball world would have said, okay, I actually understand that. I know you have to, you have bosses that you have to appease, understood, but
sure.
Nobody outside of the Rays building thinks that that was the right move. They were not, he could have pitched for 5 hours, they weren't touching him, and you know it.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Got a couple more innings. You got to remember, when you play in these situations where there's an immediacy and there's a finalization, especially when you're down and you got to win this game to get the same seven, there's a lot of emotional energy and you as a manager. And that's why I say could have gone two more, but then you got to really be ready. You got to watch and see if his elbow starts to drop. He's out of the strike zone, then you got to get him out because their pen's exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
So, absolutely. Anybody outside of the building, what in the heck did you do that for? Inside of the building, this is how we got there. It just didn't work out.
That's Steve Garvey, 10-time All-Star, World Series champion, should be in the Hall of Fame. Steve, before we let you go, how's Tommy feeling? How's Tommy Lasorda feeling?
Oh, my Lord, he can out-eat all of us. Every time I go to the dugout club, even at 93, he's got more on his plate than I do, you know.
Oh, that's great.
But
that's
he's,
awesome.
You know, I always say, and I've said to him, you know, he's been the P.T. Barnum of baseball. He's been the ringleader under the big tent and orchestrated the life of the game, and especially the Dodgers, and nobody's done it better than him. And, you know, for the life he's lived, is active over and under with 70 in Vegas. And to be 93, I always say, you know, God has said, you know, he's making people happy. And we're going to give him a little extension to his contract. So
I like it.
We all love him. And again, he called me the other day. He was 93, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I pick out little things out of the past. So I picked out something from Ogden, Utah, when he manages there. And he went off into a 5-minute dissertation. And we beat him in that fight that day, too, didn't we? Yes, you did, Tommy. So God bless him.
And
he will, and it'll keep him as long as God wants him. So.
Well, listen, well said. And great having you on. I mentioned this week in baseball, the baseball bunch, you know, all that. You were, you're one of the guys that it was at the central part of my baseball love affair. So I always, I didn't like you beating us in 81, but I loved watching the game then for
well,
sure.
Well, we got upset in 77, 78. Come on.
Well, I was too young, man. I didn't know what was going on. Otherwise, I would have been really pissed. You know, I mean,
all
no,
you
well,
kids
I, mean I would have been happy in 78.
I know.
I would have been happy, but you know what I'm saying. Listen, good having you on, Steve.
Thank you.
Great stuff, and you sound awesome. Best of Tommy Lasorda. Congrats on the championship. Dodgers Universe is back. Thanks a lot, man.
I'll share it. Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care, Steve.
Class act. And Teak, I know I've said it three times. That man should be in the Hall of Fame. You look at his postseason numbers. The numbers are debatable in totality, but anybody who watched baseball in the 80s, especially people who are older than me that really watched it with maybe a more discerning eye, The guy was one of the best players in baseball, and he played for a long. They played every day. He had a consecutive streak where before he broke his thumb on a collision at home plate with Pascual Perez. I just don't know why he's not in the Hall of Fame. Anyway, good stuff. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed that. As I throw, hey, Ak, are you there? Can you hear me?
That was my guy, Steve Garvey.
Listen, should Steve Garvey be in the Hall of Fame?
Without question.
Exactly.
I don't even blink. I thought it should have been long ago.
Me too.
He was. You look at the 1970s, and the Reds and the Dodgers won every division in that decade, and he was the cornerstone. He was the star on that team.
Yes, he was. Yes, and he was a good fielder too.
Great.
All right, man.
And he had that Rawlings signature glove.
Yeah.
That was the glove you wanted when I was a kid.
I had an Ozzie Smith glove. I was playing shortstop, but they put the heavy-footed young kids, and I was a heavy-footed big kid, but they put the heavy-footed young kids like Ak. They gave him the first baseman's mitt. Shortstop mitt.
$40 at Herman's.
I gotcha. I know. All right, update from Ak. We'll get to the blast right after that. Here's Rich. All right, Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of two elite teams slugging it out for divisional supremacy when the Pittsburgh Steelers take their defense and pretty damn good offense to Baltimore. And we just chatted with Calais Campbell before. Good spot. Ravens Steelers for a battle with Lamar and the Ravens coming off a bye. Big AFC East showdown as well. Probably bigger for the Bills. They're going to have to, show that they are ready to beat the bad teams. And right now the Pats kind of look like a bad team. Bills and Pats, join JB and the guys to get you set up for all the day's action on the NFL Today. Starts at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday. The NFL is on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. So a little football tonight, but right now we get into the blast. You ready, Teek?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
Okay, so the Seahawks acquired edge rusher Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals yesterday. We mentioned this before, after the disgruntled vet put his home up for sale and was told not to come to the facility. Probably a pretty good sign they don't want you. How much will Dunlap impact the Seahawks' record-setting bad defense?
Yeah, I think he will be very impactful. I'm trying to looking at the stats. God, they don't have more than two sacks in anybody. And that's Jamal Adams coming from the secondary. They just don't have any pass rushers up front. When you allow the quarterback, especially in that division, to run around and make plays like Kyler Murray did last week on Monday night. Not Monday night. It was Sunday.
Sunday night. They switched that one up.
Yep. When you allow a quarterback like Kyler Murray to run around and don't put pressure on him, you're going to lose games, which is exactly what happened. So he's going to have a significant impact if he can return to form that he's had really his entire career.
Yeah, he's a good player. He is a good player. And, you know, I almost look at it like, you know, two – well, you have one in-season trade. But, you know, I mean, we keep talking about Jamal Adams here. Didn't practice – sat out practice yesterday. Although I don't think he's going to play this week. But, you know, he's only played two or three games here. He's missed a lot of time. And the first game of the season had a huge play, huge sack. Listen, this was the only bright spot for my team the last couple of years. I know that I keep going to the Jamal Adams well, and I know he won't fix everything. And he's not great in pass coverage, but the ability to get after the quarterback, and not only that, but add an energy and a tone and a toughness and a presence. So with him coming back eventually and Dunlap, it's not going to get that much better, but it will get better. And with their offense, that could be enough to maybe take them all the way. I know I like Seattle a little bit more than you do, but we'll see. Steelers linebacker T.J. Watt, top five in the NFL in quarterback hits, tackles for a loss, pressures, and sacks. Has T.J. Watt been the best defensive player in the NFL this season? I'll be honest with you. Haven't really given this one much thought. I've been so enamored with the offense. You know, has he been the best defensive player in the league this year? It's pretty hard to overlook those four pertinent stats: hits, tackles for a loss, pressures, and sacks.
Yeah.
So at first glance, and by the way, he's the best player on the best defense. So, or top two or top three defense. If you want to be, there's different stats. I get that. So I would say that that's a pretty good resume builder to make that statement. Yeah. Why not?
The only competition is the same competition it is every year, and that's Aaron Donald of the LA Rams. But Aaron Donald doesn't do the things that T.J. Watt does. T.J. gets after the quarterback, but he's also asked to drop in the coverage at times, and he's just he's more versatile in what he's asked to do. Is he the best player on defense in the NFL right now? I'm going to say no, but if you're going to say, you know, is he the most impactful player? Probably, yes.
All right, Colin Hill, Mississippi State senior running backs, decided to opt out for the 2020 season. He played three games this season. How do we feel about his decision?
Yeah, no, look, Kylan Hill, there's something going on with Kylan Hill. It's a personal issue. I'm doing this game this weekend down in Tuscaloosa, Mississippi State taking on Alabama. Mississippi State head coach is unique in Mike Leach, and they don't run the ball really at all. He just wants to chuck it 50 million times a game. Something clearly happened. He's been inactive for the last 3 weeks. I don't think it's physical. So is this the right decision? Yeah, probably is, because he's at odds with Coach Leach, and so he's just going to get himself ready for the NFL.
I mean, to me, it's the right decision if you feel good about it. You can always say, well, what about leaving your teammates high and dry? Well, sure, there's always that aspect to it, but I'm sure he's communicated with some of his boys on the team, you know, whomever he's most tight with. They know what the story. I don't think it's coming out of left field as Tiki chronicled. There's a couple things, but maybe beneath the surface. I'm sure you'll get some more answers when you head down there this weekend. Find out, and you'll tell us on the show on Monday. But, you know, if his head's not in the right spot, or they're you know, he's being, you know, I will say I don't love, you know, quitting. I mean, literally, he is quitting, quitting because you're not being utilized properly. You're not getting the touches you want. If it's deeper than that, I would respect the decision more. I hope it's not just being a little petulant and wanting the football more. I don't know.
But don't forget, BT, he declared last year, it's easy to forget this, he decided to come back because Mike Leach was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then something disconnected.
Yeah. No, it hasn't worked out for sure. So, listen, you get one chance to play college ball, and you've got designs on a pro career, which you certainly will have.
Yep.
Not a big deal. I'm not going to get on the young man for that. It is what it is. The Clippers reportedly interested in signing Rajon Rondo as a free agent coming up this offseason, which I think is coming up very soon this offseason. Yep. Which team would benefit most from having Rondo on the roster? Well, we talked about this a few times, and it's like, okay, do you want to go – I mean, I don't know what he wants. Does he want to go and provide some tutelage and maybe squeeze out a couple of more million dollars? I don't know.
Yeah. Or is he trying to win a championship? He's
trying to win another championship. I'll tell you what, like an under-the-radar one, imagine him. I know that this isn't really reported, but, you know, what about with Dallas? Go to Dallas and put Doncic off the ball a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you have a grit. That's a good call.
Just a wild card. I think he would help out Philly.
Yeah,
I think he'd help out a lot of people.
Yeah, you got to think of those teams that are right there near the top or going to be in conversations at the top.
Yep.
I mean, maybe even Milwaukee. Not that he's going to go to Milwaukee.
I agree with that.
But there's, like, you think about a team like that.
Yeah.
That needs an extra, it's the undefinable oomph, right?
Uh-huh.
That's what Rajon Rondo can give you.
It's a good call. How about adding his toughness to Jimmy Butler's toughness in Miami?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's Rock really anywhere. It's really anywhere. Anywhere that's on the verge is just like he was in L.A., BT.
That's right.
I mean, he brought that for the Lakers.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
George Springer, he headlines the 2021 free agent class in baseball. Our buddy Trevor Bauer's on there for a pitcher as well. Mm. Is Springer a top 10 position player right now? Mm. No, he's not top 10. He's not a top 10 position player. He's just not. You know, he's not a Trout. He's not an Acuna. Yeah. He's not a Bellinger. He's not a Yelich. He's
Mookie
not a healthy
Betts.
Aaron Judge.
Mookie Betts.
He's not Mookie Betts. My bad. He's not a top 10 player. He's not an Altuve when healthy. I don't even know if he's a Correa or Bregman. I mean, not even the best position player on his team. I really like Springer. He's a winning player.
Yep.
He's a hard-nosed, grit player, and he's a good player. But, no, he's not a top 10 position player.
Yeah, there's
no
just there's other guys that are position players that are competing and in the conversation for MVP every year. We're not even talking about, like, the Bryce Harpers of the world who's had a couple of odd years. I don't want to say they're down years.
No, I got you.
They've been good, but
Nolan Arenado from Colorado.
Arenado, exactly.
Man,
yeah.
He's players everywhere.
No, he's not top 10.
Gotcha.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
By the way, speaking of baseball, Tony La Russa, a couple of years away from age 80. Back in the dugout. Welcome back to the sport.
76.
Go get him,
77.
Brother.
It's awesome for him.
Okay.
I mean, look, they saw what Dusty Baker did with the Astros.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, but Dusty's not 76.
I know.
76 is 70. 76 is not young.
What is Dusty Baker? 71?
Maybe, 72. That's probably about that. I've heard there's some internal dissension, though. A lot of the people that work for the White Sox didn't necessarily want that, but he's a great baseball mind. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.